to another edition of Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the weekly show covering the great outdoors in the Pacific Northwest and Rocky Mountain West. Fishing, hunting, conservation, recreation, and destinations, we cover that and more. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lur, Sportsman's Warehouse, Northeast Montana's Missouri River Country, the Wallowa County Chamber of Commerce, and the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery Program. Now, let's see what's in store this week. Here's your host, John Cruz.
Welcome to the show. It's your weekend, and if you're looking for some things to do, I've got some ideas for you. If you're a Saturday listener in Oregon, you might want to drive up the Mackenzie Highway and stop at the Eagle Rock Lodge. That's between mileposts 34 and 35 because the Mackenzie Wooden Boat Festival is happening there. Now, a flotilla of boats is going to launch at 8 a.m., arrive at the lodge around 10 a.m., and the whole area is going to have these classic wooden boats on display. The Mackenzie Drift Boat is the forerunner of the aluminum and fiberglass drift boats you see today and was developed specifically for salmon, steelhead, and trout anglers to fish the rivers of Oregon. A lot of history here and a lot of good-looking boats. My thanks to longtime listener Jim Hill for giving me the heads up about this event. Something else going on this weekend is the Lowland Lakes Opener in Washington State, also the kickoff of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Trout Derby. It's the most popular day of the year when it comes to fishing in Washington State. Lots of families hitting the lakes, all hoping to reel in trout, and there's some pretty big ones out there this year, too. Steve Caramile, the Inland Fish Program Manager for WDFW, will join us in just a few minutes to tell you more about both the opener, some places to go fishing, and about the annual Trout Derby that Washington State has. And looking ahead to May 1st, that is the day that tours open up again at Lewis and Clark Cavern State Park. These caves are absolutely amazing, and I have done both the classic tour, which is a two-mile journey, takes 2 hours and includes more than 600 stairs, a little bit of a workout there, or you can do the much easier Paradise Tour, which basically shows you the best of the caves in there, only takes 90 minutes and is only a mile and a half long, with only 15 steps to traverse. If you've never done these tours before, and even if you have, I would really recommend visiting this park. It's something else. And bring your fishing rod, too, because the Jefferson River, pretty good place to catch some brown trout, some rainbow trout, and some whitefish. This week on the show, in addition to talking to Steve Caramile, we're also going to talk to Kylie Kemble. She is with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and she's going to tell you about the Summer Becoming an Outdoors Woman Skills Workshop that they've got there. It's a weekend of camping and learning for women interested in improving their skill set, and it's really designed for beginners who want to learn about things like fly fishing or birding or kayaking. And it promises to be a lot of fun. Brianna Bruce, the owner of Livin' Life Adventures, is going to join us to talk about Lake Chelan kokanee fishing, and Lance Mers will be joining us for an extended Max Minute as well. Another guest we'll have on the show today is Laura Lancaster. She wrote a great article that's in this month's edition of Outdoor Life Online, and it's all about the testing she did of ultralight backpacks. Which one's the best? Which one's the best value? And she knows a whole lot about this. After all, she did hike the Pacific Crest Trail, and she and her crew of testers actually did their testing on the Oregon Coast Trails. So if you're into backpacking, you'll definitely want to hear this. As usual, we've got your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week, and we've also got another edition of Bird Notes, and I would highly recommend supporting Bird Notes, either by becoming a sponsor of this show segment or going directly to their website at birdnote.org and donating directly.
This is Bird Note. In spring, millions of small ducks move into shallow wetlands of North America. Tidal flats, sedge meadows, rice fields, sloughs, and backwaters. When these flocks of ducks erupt from a flooded field, they reveal a dark body with a blaze of green feathers in the wing. Their voices sound like crickets or tiny frogs. These are green-winged teal, North America's smallest dabbling duck. Just over a foot long and weighing less than a pound. As a dabbling duck, they feed from the water surface by sticking their heads underwater without fully submerging. Around 3 million green-winged teal breed across the northern U.S. and Canada. The male has a cinnamon brown head with a band of green behind the eye. Both males and females have a green bar on the wing that gleams like an emerald when the sun strikes it. Courtship is elaborate. Males show off with calls and displays, and up to 25 males may court a single female at once. The female selects just one of her many suitors. It's a remarkably competitive courtship ritual that plays out every year. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Remmel.
Wetlands are some of the most important ecosystems on Earth, but our wetlands are quickly disappearing. Find out how you can help. Join Ducks Unlimited today.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter, full of the gear you need to succeed this hunting season. Firearms, ammo, archery equipment, decoys, clothing, boots, and more. You'll find it all at Sportsman's Warehouse. Better still, the knowledgeable staff can help you with tips to help you bag a trophy or a limit. Find a location near you or shop online today at sportsmans.com.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz, and if you live in Washington State, you probably need to go fishing. That's because it's the Lowland Lakes opener. There's like 300 lakes that open up for fishing this weekend, many of them for trout, others for kokanee. With us here to tell you more about it is Stephen Caramile. He is the Inland Fish Program Manager for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Steve, great to have you back on the air.
John, it's absolutely spectacular to be back here with you.
You know, there's always so much excitement about this day, and what I love about it is that you get a lot of families out on the water for the opener.
John, you know, this is one of my favorite times of the year. I mean, I go back thinking about even to when I was a kid, fishing, and this weekend was always the one that we look forward to. I mean, we get out there with friends, we get out there with family, you know, get out there with our grandparents who taught us to fish and things like that. Yeah, this is absolutely, you know, one of my favorite weekends of the year.
And there's a good reason that all these people are going out there. Your agency has stocked a whole bunch of fish in lakes. How many trout and kokanee do you stock on an average year?
Well, on an average year, you know, we stock out about, anywhere between 14 and 16 million trout and kokanee. And, you know, we put out a lot of those are going out for the opening day.
And something else we should talk about, you know, I remember years when I've gone out in the opener and you're catching these 7-8 inch trout, but your agency is really making an effort to get some bigger trout in there for people to catch, and they're not holdovers either.
Well, that's right. You know, we've done some research over the years, and the research shows that, you know, there's a higher catchability of larger fish. And, you know, not only that, talking to anglers, I mean, obviously, anglers prefer to catch, you know, the larger fish. So what we've been doing, here over the past couple of years is the fish that we release for opening day on that are on average, you know, 2.5 fish to the pound. And so that's like somewhere around a 12 to 14 inch fish, depending on the hatchery that it comes from. You know, some of the hatcheries with colder water, you know, they still grow the fat fish, but they're just a little bit shorter. But yeah, 2.5 fish to the pound is what we aim for the opener.
Yeah, and that is absolutely fantastic. And if you're wondering about some places that have recently been stocked, I'll give you a few ideas here. There's Bay Lake in Pierce County. They got those 2.5 fish to the pound, 7,000 rainbows, nearly 6,000 rainbows at Clear Lake in Skagit County. Columbia Park Pond in Benton County got 500 rainbows. Deer Lake in Island County got a healthy stocking, as did Fader Lake in Gray County for our listeners tuning in on KXRO down there. So, you know, all sorts of places to fish all over the state. Let's run through some of the lakes that tend to have better catch rates than others. And I guess we'll start off in the Puget Sound area, Northwest Washington. What are a couple lakes that stand out as really good ones to go to?
Geez, in the Puget Sound area, you know, I mean, if we're talking about lakes like in the, you know, up north from me in the King County area, I think some of the lakes that are good in King County itself, you know, Cottage Lake, you know, Lake Geneva, Lake Wilderness, those always, you know, produce some pretty decent catch rates. In Snohomish County, you know, Martha, Lake Martha, that the other name for that is Alderwood Manor. That's another great lake. And then when you go way up north into Whatcom County, Toad Lake and Silver Lake, those are, you know, also some pretty decent lakes that have fairly decent catch rates on a yearly basis.
Let's talk about the South Sound and heading down towards the coast.
Okay, well, you know, in the South Sound and out towards the coast, you know, Lake Aberdeen and Thaler Lake out on the coast, you know, they always have great catch rates. And, you know, one of the nice things about Lake Aberdeen is, you know, there's a hatchery nearby, so they get some decent fish as well. In South Sound, you know, Pierce County and also Thurston County, Clear Lake, there's a Clear Lake in Thurston and a Clear Lake in Pierce. Those are great lakes to fish. And then, you know, some of the lakes, like in Mason County, you know, Limerick Lake is one. You know, it doesn't get a lot of pressure, but it's got some pretty decent catch rates.
And I know heading further south to Lewis County, Mineral Lake always gets healthy stockings. And over the mountains, down towards Klickitat County in the Columbia River Gorge, Horse Thief Lake, that always seems to get a lot of fish in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, Horse Thief Lake always gets a decent helping of fish. And then, you know, not too far from there is Roland Lake. Roland Lake is another lake that gets decent fish, has good catch rates, and, you know, it's got some pretty decent shoreline access to it as well.
Yes, it does indeed. Heading north into central Washington, what are a few lakes that stand out, including around Okanagan County or maybe the Yakima area?
Well, when you start talking about, like, say, Chelan County, you know, Wapato's always got some really decent catch rates. I like that lake. Jameson Lake is another one, obviously. And then, you know, in Grant County, Park Lake and Blue Lake, I mean, both of those always have, you know, good catch rates, probably a little bit higher in Blue Lake. And I'm not sure why that is. You know, Park's a little bit bigger, probably. But those are just spectacular lakes to fish as well.
Well, and not only that, the Sun Lakes, as they call them up there, there's several lakes beyond those, always really popular on opening day. And the state park actually has a little golf course there, too. So if you want to do something besides fish, you can go golfing.
Oh, nice.
All right, Okanagan County, we got to talk about, I'm guessing, Konkanoli Lake?
Konkanoli Lake, sure. Perigin.
I mean,
Perigin's a great lake to fish.
And finally, heading northeast, Stevens County, Spokane County, there's some really good fishing lakes out there.
There are some really good fishing lakes out there. You know, Clear Lake in Spokane County, that's our third Clear Lake. What's with that? And then Waits Lake in Stevens County. And then, you know, one of the other good ones, you know, that hasn't been great over the past couple of years, but it's looking good again, is Williams Lake in Spokane County.
Yeah, that really fell on hard times. I understand that it was just the perch got in there and got thick and really knocked down the fishery. Is that what happened?
Well, yeah. I mean, so what happens is, you know, yellow perch they're direct competitors with our trout plants. They eat the same food, and, you know, perch can, you know, explode in a lake. And that's kind of what happened in Williams over the past couple of years. You know, we did a rotenone treatment in there, I think two or three years ago. And, you know, we put some catchables in it, and then we started fry planting. This year, it's going to be really good. Next year, it's going to be a lot better.
Let's turn our attention to the annual WDFW Trout Derby, because that also kicks off this weekend. And there's about 100 lakes where 800 tagged trout have been planted. And if you catch one of those tagged trout, they're worth a prize, aren't they?
Yeah, so exactly. So I think we have about 105 lakes that we're planting with tagged fish. And we've got roughly 850 prizes that have been donated from our licensing vendors. And those prizes, they total, overall, just over $42,000 worth. And this is great. I mean, we've been doing this program since 2015, I believe. So this is the ninth year. So, yeah, if you're out there fishing one of these lakes, I mean, if you get a yellow tag, they'll be tagged up by the dorsal fin. You look at one side of the tag, it'll have a number on it. And you look at the other side of the tag, and it gives you a website, wdfwderby.com. And that's where you can go. It'll ask you to put your information in, the number of the tag, and then that's how you claim your prize.
All right. Well, great excuse to go fishing, folks, this weekend. Again, it is the opener. The lakes are primed with hatchery trout, and some of those trout have got tags on them that are worth some pretty interesting prizes. Some of them little, some of them pretty big. So go fishing. If you want to find out more about the Trout Derby and about what lakes are being stocked, just go to wdfw.wa.gov and go to the fishing page. That's wdfw.wa.gov. Steve, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Hey, John, thanks for having me on once again, and hey, let's do this again soon.
Absolutely.
Anglers are getting a raise this year with the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery Program, and the fish are biting. Here's how it works. First, register at a pike minnow station along the Columbia or Snake River. Next, go fishing for pike minnow and bring back all of them that measure 9 inches or longer. The fish are worth $6, $8, or $10, and the more fish you catch, the more each one is worth. Keep an eye out for tagged fish, too, because those are worth $500. Go fishing, make money, and have fun. Find out more at pikeminnow.org.
This year, resolve to immerse yourself into the great outdoors. Whether you're learning to hunt, fish, hike, camp, paddle, or grill, or are looking to take yourself to the next level, the place to go for the gear you need is Sportsman's Warehouse. With over 145 stores around the nation, Sportsman's Warehouse is truly America's premier outfitter. Find a store near you or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com. That's sportsmans.com for Sportsman's Warehouse.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio and to an extended Max Minute brought to you by Max Lure.
It's time for another Max Minute brought to you every week by Max Lure. This week, we're taking you to Odell Lake. It's located in Oregon's Central Cascades, and it's best known as a great place to go fishing for lake trout. That's right. Mackinac is what attracts a lot of people. But with us here today to tell us about a different species you can catch down there is Lance Mers. Lance, what else are we fishing for at Odell Lake?
Kokanee.
Who would have thunk? Tell me more.
The kokanee fishing down at Odell Lake is absolutely phenomenal.
Wow.
It's absolutely fantastic fishing. There's an abundance of kokanee, and everybody's going to have a great time.
Any size, or are we talking your little 7 to 9 inches here?
They're the average size for kokanee. I guess the biggest kokanee I've heard so far is a 16-inch.
You know, that's not a bad kokanee at all.
Very nice.
And folks, if you haven't tried kokanee before, trust me on this. Try some right off the grill. You're going to fall in love with these fish. They taste fantastic. So we've gotten that far, but I guess we better talk about how to catch them out of Odell Lake. What do you recommend?
My go-to, John, is the Max Lure Cha-Cha Kokanee Squitter, or otherwise known as a Hoochie. It's got number 4 hooks, no gap at all, with a 0.8 smile blade, and it comes in 8 different styles, and the action on these squitters are absolutely phenomenal.
So are you fishing this behind generally a Max Double D Dodger and below a downrigger generally?
That's right. Yeah, you can long line it if you wanted to, but I use it behind a Dodger on my downriggers, and I'm using about a 12 to 14 inch leader behind that Dodger.
Well, there you go, folks. That's how you can catch some kokanee, too, out of Odell Lake in Oregon Central Cascades. The lure to use, again, is the Cha-Cha Kokanee Squitter. It's made by Max Lure. Look for it in a store near you or online
at maxlure.com.
Wedding rings? I've had as many as I've got fingers on my hands. I started off with the Wedding Ring Classic, of course. That smooth blade from Indiana. That beaded body. The sharp hook. We caught a lot of trout together over the years, but then that patented Smile Blade wedding ring, well, let's just say it took my fancy, along with the trout and the kokanee. Now I'm going through this new age sort of phase. You might say I'm hooked on the new high UV colored wedding rings, and I'm catching more fish than ever. So yeah, I've got a whole bunch of wedding rings. You should get some too. Don't look at the jewelry store though. These wedding ring spinners are from Max Lure, and you'll find them at the sporting goods store near you or online at maxlure.com.
Want to go fishing and make money? You are in luck. This year's Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery kicks off May 1st. Just register at a check station and go fishing for 9-inch or longer northern pike minnow within designated waters of the Columbia or Snake River. Then you bring your fish back and collect a voucher good for a cash reward. The more fish you catch, the more they're worth. Catch a pike minnow with a special tag and you've landed $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org. That's pikeminnow.org.
A seafood bounty is waiting for you on Northwest Oregon's Tillamook Coast. Catch a limit of big salmon, haul up a pot of delicious crab. Plan your visit today at TillamookCoast.com.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got Laura Lancaster on the line. She resides in Seattle, and she is lucky enough to work for Outdoor Life, and she just wrote a really interesting article that you can find at outdoorlife.com about the best ultralight backpacks of 2024. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's go ahead and start off about backpacks. Now, my heyday as a backpacker was back in, I'd say college and a little bit afterwards, and even before, you know, when I was a Boy Scout. And my weapon of choice was the classic Kelty backpack with the aluminum frame where you strapped your sleeping bag to the bottom of the frame and you had your little foam pad that you slipped through at the top and you put everything else in between. These new ultralight backpacks are a completely different animal, aren't they?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I have to say that I also started my backpacking with one of those aluminum frames. It was my dad's old backpacking backpack. That's how a lot of us get started, with hand-me-down gear. But at that same time that you were using your old Kelty pack, there was a group of people who were trying to figure out how exactly you hike from Mexico to Canada on the Pacific Crest Trail. And what they were increasingly finding is that it's very tough to do that if you're carrying 40, 50, 60 pounds on your back at a time. So they were trying to figure out, how do we start to cut the weight on our backpacks? And part of the answer to that is ultralight backpacks.
So you've actually hiked the Pacific Crest Trail yourself. What are you carrying in an ultralight backpack in terms of sleeping gear, in terms of stoves, in terms of that other stuff you need?
You know, a lot of it is the same gear that you would carry if you were on a regular backpacking trip. Just it's a lighter version of that same kind of gear. So maybe instead of having a synthetic sleeping bag, you have a down sleeping bag that uses a premium down. Maybe instead of having like a jet boil stove, you have like a little tiny pocket rocket canister stove.
And here's the other question. Again, getting back to the old aluminum frames, it was really easy to know exactly where to put the sleeping bag, exactly where to put the foam pad. I'm looking at these ultralight bags. Do you just stuff everything inside and that's how it goes?
Yeah, that is basically what happens. It does help once you've sort of pared your gear back to only the essentials and the lightest version of the essentials. But something we found on our test of the best ultralight backpacks is that bringing some kind of experience of how to properly pack an ultralight backpack can really affect someone's experience. And that people who are new to ultralight backpacks sometimes do better with ultralight backpacks that have a little bit more of a robust frame to them. Even something as simple as like a piece of foam along the back panel can dramatically change someone's experience. But yeah, to answer your question, when you're backpacking all day, every day for a month straight, you get really good at packing your backpack and you know exactly what order to sort of Tetris all of your gear up inside so that it's easily accessible.
So I like the way you did this test. I've read articles before from testers where it was completely subjective. It was just based on the author's point of view. But you actually had a whole crew of experienced backpackers. And I'm interested in where you tested this too.
Did have a good crew of experienced backpackers, but I think it's important to note that within that, their experience was really different. So we had one who had 11,000 miles of through hiking experience, and we had another tester who had never done anything more than like 4 days out in the wilderness. And I think that that's really important for people to remember, because ultralight backpacking used to be thought of as something that's just for the elite. It's just for people trying to hike the Pacific Crest Trail. And that's not true anymore. Now anybody can take advantage of this great gear that's out there. And we were able to identify which of the ultralight backpacks in our test were better suited for people with less experience.
Interesting. And where did the testing take place?
We tested our ultralight backpacking gear on the Oregon Coast Trail, which is sort of a newer long trail. It's about 400 miles, runs down along the coast of Oregon. And we were at the top section of that trail.
Nice. All right. Well, let's talk about the results. What was the best overall ultralight pack and why?
You know, the best ultralight backpack in the end was this old standby from a company called ULA that's based out of Utah. Another great part of ultralight backpacking is that a lot of the companies are based out of the United States. So it's pretty cool to be able to buy made in the USA. And they have been making this backpack called the Circuit for decades at this point in time. And it's become a real standby of the through hiking community. And it was interesting to see how it fared with our testing group, with people who had different experience. Almost everyone was able to find like a comfortable enough fit with our testing backpack that we had with us. But something that's great about the ULA Circuit that's different from other ultralight backpacks is that they offer a massive range of customization. So, you know, you can customize the size and the shape of your hip belt. You can customize the length of the torso. There's all kinds of different ways that you can help make that backpack the right fit for you, which I think is just a great value for people looking to get into ultralight backpacking. So the ULA circuit currently retails for $280, although if you have a larger budget than that, you can get a different version of that backpack that's made from a new material called Ultra that is sort of taking the through hiking world by storm. This material is waterproof and extremely durable and even lighter weight than some of the other backpacking materials that people had been using previously. Because this is a smaller company and it's sort of serving a smaller community of the backpacking audience, there isn't a way that you can go try this out on a store. The only way to buy this backpack is to buy direct from ULA. And that was true for a lot of the ultralight backpacks that we tested.
Okay, well, let's talk about the best value pack, because in this economy, a lot of us are looking to stretch our dollars.
Yeah, so something that was so interesting to me on our test was that our testers that had been using more traditional backpacking backpacks in the test, sort of like what you were talking about with all of these different options for organization, they were less bothered in the end by the less support, the less structure of the ultralight backpacks, and they were more bothered by the lack of organization. And so they really gravitated towards another backpack that was called the Mountain Smith Zirk, which had, in addition to having a giant sort of mesh pocket on the back, also had two double mesh pockets, if that makes sense, if you can visualize that,
right,
along the shoulder straps and along the side of the pack. So they just felt like they could put all of the different small pieces of gear that they wanted to access throughout the day inside those pockets. And the reason why that was so interesting that they felt that way about that backpack is that was one of the few backpacks on our test that didn't have any kind of hip belt, really. There's a small nylon strap that sort of slings around the side, but that's just to sort of help keep the backpack from tipping around you. It's not transferring the weight like you would in a traditional backpacking backpack from your shoulders to your hips. So once your gear's weight is really down, then that part of being able to transfer the weight to your hips becomes less important to people. And but sometimes that organization piece can still come into play.
Interesting. That's really interesting to me because, you know, to me, the hip belt was always so important because otherwise it's just dragging on your shoulders and it makes for a really uncomfortable hiking experience. So the fact that there is no hip belt on this, that's intriguing to me that the tester still liked it.
Yeah, and that's why I always tell people when you're getting into ultralight backpacking, you want to switch out your backpack last. Get everything else in your kit down to the weight that you think you're going to end up with, and then start to look at what backpack that you want, because then you'll have a better idea as to like what kind of features and what kind of weight you'll be comfortable with.
Very good advice there. And as for the Mountain Smith Zirk, where can folks buy this and what does this retail for?
This is one that you can probably find at Cabela's. You can certainly find it at RAI, and that one retails for around $200, $220.
All right. Well, check out these backpacks and more in the current edition of Outdoor Life. You'll find that at outdoorlife.com, and check out other articles by Laura Lancaster, too. Laura, I look forward to having you on the show again soon.
Great. That sounds wonderful.
In other news, you missed the deadline to fish the Pro-Am and the Big Bass Tournament at Potholes Reservoir, but I got to tell you, there's still lots of good reasons to come out to the Columbia Basin and Grant County and go fishing. There's some great lakes out there, not just Potholes Reservoir for walleye, bass, and trout, but also Soda Lake, which is just a couple of miles south of Potholes Reservoir. Great walleye fishery there, also has trout and bass. If you head a little bit north to the town of Moses Lake, you'll find Moses Lake itself, which is a fantastic spring fishery. And don't forget Banks Lake to the north, because Banks Lake also offers fantastic bass and walleye fishing. And then in between those, you've got the Sun Lakes and places like Park Lake and Blue Lake in particular, very popular on weekends like this one, the opener for the Lowland Lakes. If you're looking for places to stay, there's a whole bunch of great accommodations ranging from Mardon Resort at Potholes Reservoir to all sorts of chain hotels in Moses Lake and several resorts like Cooley Playland Resort at Banks Lake. So make plans to head to Grant County and go fishing. Whether you're in a tournament or not, you're going to love it.
A sharp blade makes short work of any project you have in the outdoors, in the kitchen, or in the shop. Hone your knives and tools with quality power and manual sharpeners from Worksharp. Find out more at worksharptools.com.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We are taking you to Montana. That's our next stop. And if you are a woman who wants to improve your skill set when it comes to the outdoors, we've got something for you. It's the Becoming an Outdoors Woman Summer Workshop taking place August 16th through the 18th. And registration is opening up soon. With us here to tell you more about it is Kylie Kemble. She is the Outdoor Skills Coordinator with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Kylie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So before we talk about the camp, let's talk about the program, Becoming an Outdoors Woman. It's not specific to Montana. I understand it's in about 26 states, to include Wyoming as well. What is this all about?
Yeah, it's a national program that was started back in 1990 out of Wisconsin, and it took hold across the nation pretty fast. And Montana joined in 1994. So it's been around for quite a few years, and it's a program designed to teach women outdoor skills and offer them a place, a non-competitive, encouraging place where they can learn from other women with these skills and then go out and participate in outdoor recreation of all kinds.
And I love the concept of this because, let's face it, sometimes when a man teaches a woman, especially if it's a significant other, things don't go very well. I'm thinking about my ex-wife the first time I took her to a pistol range, and that experiment didn't go well at all. Let's put it that way.
Yes, we certainly have different learning styles. Each individual person does, and sometimes those learning styles are conflicting with each other.
So I love the fact, again, that it's women teaching women, definitely a safe space for everybody. And Becoming an Outdoors Woman, this is mainly for beginners, isn't it?
Yes, most of our classes are designed for first-time users, but we certainly encourage anyone who wants to kind of expand their skills or brush up on skills, and occasionally we do more advanced classes, but we're very careful to advertise exactly what level a class is at.
Let's talk about this summer workshop. It's taking place in the Lubrecht Experimental Forest. Where is this? Tell me more about the setting for this summer camp.
Yeah, so Lubrecht is an experimental forest owned by the University of Montana, I believe. It's about 30 miles east of Missoula in Greeno, Montana, and it's just a great facility. They offer cabins and a lodge and camping facilities, so we can keep everyone together on site for the entire weekend. They have a full kitchen, so we bring in food for the whole weekend, and everyone gets to choose four different classes. It starts noon on Friday, August 16th, and it closes down about noon on Sunday, August 18th this year. So it's a full weekend, lots of activities. They'll take their four education classes, anything from fly fishing to birding, and then we'll do some evening programming with additional educational opportunities and a lot of networking and getting to meet other women who have similar interests.
Now, I presume this isn't just sitting in a classroom and taking it all in like you do at school. I'm guessing there's a lot of hands-on when it comes to these classes?
Yes, a lot of our learning is hands-on. There's a little bit of classroom stuff because the base information is important to get before you start.
Sure.
But a lot of our classes, you're going to be out doing fly fishing classes, end up fly fishing on the streams outside of Greeno, Montana. Our kayaking classes go down the Clearwater River canoe trail. So absolutely, they are out doing these things as they learn.
So this is the Montana Becoming an Outdoors Woman Summer Workshop. Does that mean you're only accepting applications from Montana residents?
We, in Montana, we're about inclusivity, so the way I run the program right now is you must be 18 to apply, but it's a first-come, first-served timestamp, and then we create a priority list based on if you've attended our camp before, and that's because this is a beginner's weekend, and we want to offer it to as many first-time attendees, and I know a lot of people really love the camp, and we'd love to see people return, but we do give a priority for the first couple days of registration to someone who's never been to our camp before.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So even if you don't live in Montana, you can attend this camp. Let's talk about the registration process. It opens up May 18th at 10 a.m., so folks, you might want to mark that on your calendar right now. May 18th, 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. How do folks register?
Yeah, so I'll be posting the web address shortly before, a week or two before May 18th, and that's where they will apply for their timestamp. It's through a CalcMay website. and they'll get their timestamp that way. And then about a week after that, once I've got enough participants lined up, I'll create that priority list based on if they've attended before. And then I'll be sending out emails to invite them to choose classes. About the first 60 people we'll start with and see how many more we can fit in. But yeah, I'll invite them to pay and choose classes and attend the weekend.
If you're listening and you're interested, be sure to check out the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks website. Go to their news release page and just keep an eye on that, because this information is going to be coming up pretty soon. And you definitely want to register sooner than later, like maybe 10:01 a.m. Mountain Standard Time on May 18th would be a good time to do so. So again, at least 60 applicants are going to be offered a chance to do this. What's the cost for this camp?
It ranges based on your lodging accommodations from $240 to $340 for the full weekend.
But that includes all your meals too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. All your meals, all your classes. We have quite a few giveaways. A lot of our classes end up with prizes. And then you get to use all of our equipment. You don't have to bring equipment that you're taking.
Oh, this sounds like a fantastic opportunity for folks, again, who are women who are looking to expand their skill set in the outdoors, whether you want to get into birding or fly fishing or kayaking or more. So again, it's a summer Becoming an Outdoors Woman camp, August 16th through the 18th. Registration opens up May 18th. I guess I should ask, do you have any other events coming up this year that folks ought to know about?
Yeah, we're certainly working on some additional summer programming. Right now, we've got a Makoshika hike and paleontology walk come up May 4th. That's a pretty exciting one out at partnering with Makoshika State Park. And then we're working on a couple classes in Kalispell, a women's kind of a full day skills training, kind of like a mini bow, but just for one day. And it'll look at outdoor essentials, ecological discoveries, and natural art. And then hopefully some fly fishing workshops too coming up.
All right. Is there a website our listeners can go to find out more about these programs so they can sign up for them?
Yes. Everything that we've got coming open or that is open is on our Fish, Wildlife, and Parks website under Education, Becoming an Outdoors Woman.
All right. Montana, always offering some great opportunities and offering some fantastic opportunities for women who want to, again, expand their skill set when it comes to the outdoors and just learn some new things and have some fun. It's the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program in Montana. Kylie, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thanks so much.
Next up, we got Brianna Bruce on the line. She is the owner of Living Life Adventures and just finished her career in the fishing department at the Everett Sportsman's Warehouse store so she can have a little bit more time on the water fishing. Brianna, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be here, John.
So let's talk a little bit about your next destination. You're going to be spending about 3 weeks at Lake Chelan. It's got a wonderful kokanee fishery there, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does, and it's one of my very favorite places to go hang out.
What part of this lake, which extends over 50 miles, are you going to be fishing?
So I fish the lower section pretty much from the Narrows down to the town of Chelan.
Gotcha. And what's the average size of the kokanee this year? I know it varies from year to year.
It varies, but we've been seeing some bigger fish this year and, you know, some 13, 14 inches pretty regularly, seeing a few like 16s every day. And we've been finding some fish up to 18 inches.
Nice. Very nice indeed. And folks, kokanee, landlocked sockeye salmon. So you know they taste fantastic. What's the limit? Is it 10 fish?
10 fish per person.
Okay. How deep are you fishing, generally speaking, this time of year? And what are you using?
So this time of year, we're fishing a little bit deeper. A lot of times we'll find fish from like 60 to 100, 120 feet. And then as the water warms up, we'll start to fish a little shallower and into some shallower water. We just kind of, it's different every year, and we follow the schools around where we can find them. Right now I'm running downriggers with dodgers, like a 4 or a 6 inch dodger, and some kind of a spinner is my favorite, like a beaded spinner, like a Max wedding ring, something along those lines. And I always fish 2 hooks. I like number 4s. Some people fish number 2s, but I can always catch a bigger fish on a number 4. No problem. I mean, we use them for steelhead even.
And as for color, I'm presuming pink?
Pink or orange. Orange is my main go-to on Chelan. And bait, I'm even dyeing my corn orange. I'm using Slam and Sam's orange corn cure for that.
Very interesting. All right. Well, folks, if you want to go fishing with Brianna, I guarantee you, you're going to have a good time. She's going to get you in the fish, and Lake Chelan is a beautiful destination to fish at. And once you're off the water, plenty of stuff to do in town or in Manson as well. So go to Livin' Life Adventures on Facebook or go to livinlifeadventures.com. Get a hold of Brianna. Book your trip today. Thanks as always, Brianna.
Thanks, John.
Come to Montana's Missouri River Country for an awesome fishing adventure. Northeast Montana is home to Fort Peck Reservoir, a massive body of water known for great walleye, pike, bass, and Chinook salmon fishing. Nelson Reservoir has given up state records for northern pike and perch, and don't forget our rivers. The Yellowstone and Missouri are classic destinations. And if you're coming in June, you have to check out the Catfish Classic on the Milk River. Plan your fishing trip today at MissouriRiverMT.com and sign up to receive a free travel guide.
Anglers are getting a raise this year with the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery Program, and the fish are biting. Here's how it works. First, register at a pike minnow station along the Columbia or Snake River. Next, go fishing for pike minnow and bring back all of them that measure 9 inches or longer. The fish are worth $6, $8, or $10, and the more fish you catch, the more each one is worth. Keep an eye out for tagged fish too, because those are worth $500. Go fishing, make money, and have fun. Find out more at pikeminnow.org.
Come to Oregon's Wallowa County for outdoors adventure. Hike, ride, paddle, fish, or sightsee to your heart's content. And then visit one of our wonderful towns, whether it be Joseph with its beautiful bronze statues, our county seat in Enterprise, or one of our charming small towns like Wallowa, Imnaha, or Troy, where you can eat, shop, and sleep before continuing your adventure the next day. Plan your visit now at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
The Brewster Salmon Derby is going off August 2nd through the 4th on the Upper Columbia River. There's over $10,000 in cash and prizes, to include a $2,000 check for the King of the Pool. Register today at BrewsterSalmonDerby.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter. With the gear you need for fishing, hunting, camping, paddling, cooking, and just about anything else you can do in the woods or in the water. With over 125 stores across America, there is bound to be a Sportsman's Warehouse near you. With not only the gear you need, but also the experts to help you get the most out of the product you purchase. Head down to your local Sportsman's Warehouse today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com. That's sportsmans.com.
Before we go today, we've got time for one last shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with your host, John Cruz.
I'm glad you're back, because it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week, and this one's going to be a tougher one than usual. It's about the porcupine, that really big quilled rodent found throughout the Northwest. Now, here's your question. What is a group of porcupines called? I can tell you it's not called a herd, it's not called a flock, it's called something else entirely, but the name makes a lot of sense once you figure it out. If you know the answer, you know what to do. Just shoot me an email at john@northwesternoutdoors.com or go to our website at northwesternoutdoors.com and shoot me an email through the contact page. And again, what is a group of porcupines called? One lucky person who guesses right wins a $25 gift card from America's Premier Outfitter. And by the way, they do carry needle-nose pliers that work to get not only hooks out of fishes' mouths, but probably porcupine quills out of you or your dog. As we wrap things up, I'm going to let you know that next week you're getting a best of edition of the show. The reason? Very simple. I'm fishing the Big Bass Tournament at Potholes Reservoir. Wish me and my best friend Rusty luck. As always, we're going to need it, and we can always use your thoughts and prayers when it comes to maybe finally, in our 10th year of tournament bass fishing, cashing a check. Until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.